back to the gospel. We don't have games to talk about today, but boy, oh boy, do we have a whole lot to talk about today. I am your host, Zay, the fantasy football fiend himself, and I have my guys with me, my bros, Young Vander, the fantasy Nostradamus. Holla at the people.
Hey, what's going on out there?
And BK Wind, the betting extraordinaire. Holla at the people.
Hey.
So, yo, we got quite a bit that happened over the last few days that we have to break down, speculate, give opinions on, and in some situations celebrate, because two of us, wait, BK, who's your basketball team? I can't remember.
Are you trying to make me depressed to start the show? It's the Bulls.
That's right. That's why I don't remember. They haven't done anything noteworthy since that one dude that was there.
Let's put it this way. I had hair the last time it happened.
Hey, you finally got rid of Zach LaVine. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's just rip the Band-Aid off. And wow, the Lakers made a heck of a trade. And maybe you guys can convince me of the other side of it being better for the now than the future, or however that may be shaped. But the Lakers get Luka Doncic, and we get to move on from AD. So at first, I thought this was going to be one of those, ha-ha, gotcha. Like, I had to make sure it wasn't one of those, you know, trolling sites the first time I saw it. You guys have known me for a while. And pretty much ever since Anthony Davis became a Laker, I've been trying to trade him to somebody, somewhere. I didn't know that Luka Doncic was available for Anthony Davis.
Apparently, neither did anyone else.
That's another huge piece of it. Neither did anybody else. No one else knew that Luka Doncic was available in general. There are a lot of layers that we have to peel back here. First of all, what would you grade the trade for each team? But then after we look at that, the fact that no other team was contacted and there was not even anything floated out there that, hey, if you guys want to give us an offer that'll beat this, we'll be willing to talk. I may be wrong, but I'm willing to bet Milwaukee might have had a conversation with you, and I would have preferred Giannis over AD. That's just me. There are a few other teams that have, you know, a superstar that they may have been willing to have the conversation, but what's the grade that you guys have, and what is your rationale for why no other team was even brought into the loop on what was going on? Vander, why don't you start us out? I know you're a resident Laker fan. So, you know, what's your opinion on the situation? What's your grade on the trade? And why was no one else even included in the conversation?
Well, this trade is kind of a two-part thing as far as it comes to grade, because now you have the effects, you know, the present, and then you have future. So far as the Lakers go, I think it's a lateral move as of right now, maybe a step down, because we lose our best defender that's protecting the glass, and we gain a guy that doesn't play defense, right? But it's an A+, 10 years rolling from here and 10 years ahead, because now we have a superstar that's going to replace LeBron James. As he's exiting the building, we have one coming in. This is LA. We must have a superstar in the organization. We see it in years past. We traded for Wilt. We traded for Kareem. We traded for Shaq. We traded for LeBron. So we've always had guys that we bring in to carry the torch. And Luka will be the next guy that's going to carry for these next 10 years. So I would say that is an A+ when it comes to that. I do think this gave them a great chance to win now. Adding, you know, him to their front court. But where their team is assembled, it's a pretty good move for them as of today. But for future, I think the Luka one is better. And one of the reasons why, probably the main reasons why no one was contacted when it comes to availability, both of the GMs have a relationship. Goes back to Nike. The GM from the Mavs, he was working at Nike, while the GM from the Lakers was Kobe's agent, who was signed with Nike.
Got you.
There's a relationship there. So this is like a, not really pick up the team phone to call you. I'm going to pick up my cell phone to call your phone and say, hey, what about this? So it's one of those deals. That is definitely would have get way more on the market if they would have told the whole league that Luka was available. You probably would have seen 3, 4. Hell, we've seen guys go for, Mikal Bridges went for like 3 first round picks. So what do you think Luka going to go for? 6, 7, 8? No, I mean, it's going to be something ridiculous. So I think on the open market, they could have got a better deal, but for the time being and for what they needed, it's not a bad trade.
BK, are you of the same mindset, or do you think they got completely hosed and somebody needs to be fired? Like, what are your thoughts?
So I think long-term, this is a huge win for the Lakers, right? Because what this whole trade was very telling to me on both sides. From the Lakers' standpoint, it tells me that, look, LeBron's last season is probably this year or next. He got to play with his son. There's no chance of a title. So his career is coming to an end. So it's interesting to me that the Lakers are intentionally choosing to move the franchise forward with Luka versus AD, which I think is by far the better choice. Not only is Luka the much better, he's younger, he's much more talented, and he stays healthy. So for all those reasons, it makes sense for the Lakers. It also helps them this year because Luka will be able to fit well with that team. Although from a X's and O's standpoint for the Lakers, my only concern this year is this. The Lakers only have 3 players on the roster prior to the trade, and they still only have 3 players on the roster of any value after the trade. So from a pieces part, it doesn't change this season really at all for them. What I'll say for the Mavs is, so A for the Lakers, I'd say D for the Mavs. And here's why. AD, we know, is constantly hurt. In fact, he's already going to miss time. And the Mavs knew about this. The Lakers told them about the injury. He's going to be out probably 10 days anyway to start. But what was telling to me about it is, A, to Vander's point, the Mavs would have been better off in terms of value putting him out on the open market and let everyone go nuts about trying to get him, right? Can you imagine the media frenzy and all the offers that would have rolled in to get Luka? I mean, that's crazy. You saw the players' reaction on social media while they found out during the game. So Durant and Booker, to mention a couple. So, but what a kick in the nuts if you're Luka, right? Like, you're going to lose $116 million in this move. $345 million supermax if you would have stayed in Dallas. $229 max deal with the Lakers. Now, look, I get it. We would all love to have the problem of getting $229 million. Confident we'd all be okay. But I think it's telling to me that there were legitimate concerns in the Mavs franchise about Luka's lack of defense, lack of conditioning, putting on a ton of weight. Would his body hold up? What would he look like down the line? It seems to me like they made the determination internally that they weren't going to make a supermax deal to him because they were concerned about these things. So we're going to get whatever we can and move on.
Yeah, I can see that, BK. But at the same time, if you're going to get what you can, then you should probably make some sort of a general announcement that this is the direction that you're planning on moving in. Now, he actually, when you look at it, he actually lost more than $116 million. And the reason I say that is he went from Texas to Los Angeles, Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the tax situations between those two states.
Yeah, way different.
Quite a bit different. One has no state tax. One has one of the highest state taxes. It's more than 116 million that he had. But then you also, what do you gain from being in that market and having that name? By the end of the summer, he'll probably have one of the highest selling jerseys. So there's that part of it too. So
jerseys, endorsements, he'll have no problem making that up through endorsements.
This is probably one of the first times we've seen an international star in a big city. Most of the international stars are in smaller markets. I mean, look at Greek Freak, even though you look at Joker, you look at Wemby, who's in San Antonio. So a lot of the international stars are usually in smaller markets. This is one of the first times we've seen an international star be in a big market. So that would bring more dollars. But one other thing I want to say before we move on, I think the whole weight and all that kind of stuff is kind of like just something else they could just throw in there to make it. Because, I mean, I haven't seen any digression or anything on the court. I mean, the guy's still doing what he does year in, year out, even playing better in the playoffs, led that team to the finals last year, which no one seen that coming, right? So that's one thing. I think the bigger picture here that people is missing is, what's the one thing that's not around anymore? It's Mark Cuban. I think Mark Cuban had this guy spoil you. And now Mark Cuban is out the building and the spoiling has stopped. And now people are fed up because you be getting away with whatever you be getting away with. But Mark was in the building and now he's no longer here. And now we're going to invest this $340 some odd million into you. And I want to say one other thing. It's really more than that 100 as well as on this level, because think about it. He's 25 years old, available for the Supermax, which is the 345. But before he turns 30, what do you think that figure was going to look like? The next one. Like the next one would have been 600 or something.
It would have been stupid. It would have been.
Next 10 years, he could have probably get close to $1 billion out of these guys. So not only they avoided this five, the next five, he's still young because he's still in his prime. He's only 25. He probably would have hit him for a good 800 before it's all said and done in the next 10 years.
That's a great point.
And I think what we're seeing here is a way for, regardless of whether you're a small market or a large market, if you have a star who's coming up on contract and you know you need a star in your market on your team, but you don't want to pay said star a Supermax deal, just trade for another star and you and the other team save a whole bunch of money. I think we're actually going to see that quite a bit more than because it's the antidote to the CBA agreement that came about with the Supermax in it.
Yeah.
It's how I can still have a Supermax player, but never pay Supermax money.
Well, real quick, so from this point on, I don't want to hear anything about loyalty coming from nobody talking about, well, players need to be loyal and stick with their team. And this and that, I don't want to hear that, because loyalty just lost that man $100 some odd million.
I've never been a proponent of saying that the team or the player should be loyal, because I don't think either one will be in the right or wrong, quote unquote, situation. If a team can save $116 million and if a player can gain $116 million, guess what both of them are about to do?
They're going to do exactly that.
I'm going to holler at you later. Appreciate you. Moving right along. So let's just call a thing a thing. Like, loyalty is one of those words in sports that gets the fan base riled up. There is none of that. Behind closed doors, business is business. There's no such word as loyalty other than when you're trying to make the fans that have been loyal to that star, you're trying to anger them and make the star feel as if their fan base will turn on them personally. And it's not worth losing all of that by making a pimp decision, if you will, that's best for you. But yeah, in basketball, and here's the thing too, the owners played it smart, because didn't they just agree to a new CBA like just a year or two ago? So they aren't going back to the drawing boards to be able to fix this anytime soon. I guarantee you going forward, a lot of these superstars will not get caught without a no-trade clause. That's what it's going to boil down to. Right now, LeBron and Bradley Beal are the only two players in the NBA that have a no-trade clause. I promise you going forward, as these players sign these contracts, that will be a part of it. Because you can't just expect the team to be loyal. You have to have one of those conversations of, well, if you're going to be loyal, then why wouldn't you give me a no-trade clause? Because according to you, you're not going to trade me for the entirety of this contract. So what am I missing?
And it's funny, he just closed on a $13 million house last week. Luka did.
Well, I guess he's going to be selling a $13 million house next week because that's kind of where, like, or he was more sad about the house than he was about getting traded at this point.
Listen, he might have two homes.
Or that too. Why not? You got it. I know how much money you lost, but I know how much money you're getting paid too. So you can have two homes. It'll be all right. Matter of fact, don't even buy a house in L.A. It costs too much. Just rent out in L.A. and keep your home in Texas. You don't play all year round anyway. You'll be all right. Keep your house in Texas. Another huge NBA trade move that it kind of materialized. I don't know. I thought it was going to be one of those, I don't want to be here anymore, but you're going to string me along at least to next year. Nah. De'Aaron Fox said he didn't want to be in Sacramento anymore. They got him up out of there. He said specifically the team he wanted to go to, and that's exactly where they sent him. De'Aaron Fox and Jordan McLaughlin ended up with the Spurs. Zach LaVine, Siddy Cisoka, and three first-round picks, three second-round picks go to the Kings. Zach Collins, Trey Jones, Kevin Huerter, and a 2025 first end up going to, I think it's the, what's it, the
Bulls.
Is it the Bulls? Yeah, the Bulls. So who wins? Who loses? Is it just kind of par for the course everywhere around, somewhat equal? Do we think that the Spurs are going to end up moving on from Chris Paul now that they have the rookie Castle, didn't have to move him in the trade, and you have a veteran in De'Aaron Fox? Like, what's your all-around vantage point of this particular deal? Go ahead and start us out, BK.
So I like the move all the way around. Okay. I don't really say this a lot in trades, but I think this was a win for all parties, and here's why. It's a win for the Bulls because they were dying for the last few years to get rid of Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
And his contract was so awful through their own doing, and he kept getting injured that every time they tried to trade him, he would get hurt. So the fact that they were able to get rid of him, unload him, was a huge benefit for the Bulls. I love this move for the Spurs because with Wemby and then Fox and then Castle, like, Wemby finally has some talent around him to really help. And it's a win for the Kings because if your player tells you he's not going to come back, you might as well get something for him before you get nothing.
And three firsts, three seconds, and a star player, that's definitely a lot more than nothing. So, yeah, I mean, it rarely happens in sports that everybody gets what they want, but De'Aaron Fox got what he wanted. The Kings got something fair in return and what they wanted as far as being able to build, because with three first-rounders, three second-rounders, Zach LaVine's pretty good when he's healthy. He's hooking back up with his former teammate. So we see that there's a bit of a relationship here between the Bulls and Sacramento. In consecutive years, the Bulls were able to kind of get rid of a veteran player while picking up assets. The Kings, who don't want to go back to having assets and not having a team, were able to pick up star players. Like, Vander, do you feel like anyone lost in it? I mean, like, it's very seldom in a multiple-team trade that no one loses, but I find it hard to find a loser based on what each of the teams was trying to accomplish.
No, I think everybody's satisfied. In all honesty, I mean, you got rid of a guy that didn't want to be there. Bulls got rid of a guy they didn't want anymore. They've been trying to trade him for that. Nobody wanted Zach LaVine. I mean, he's been on the trade block for a minute now. And then the Spurs was able to get another all-pro, all-NBA style player in Fox. I think him and Chris Paul probably will both start. I think they move him
to Fox probably start at the two. Chris Paul obviously going to start at the one.
Yeah, they'll probably do that. Because, I mean, Chris Paul, he's only has, what, a few minutes left. So who's going to move for him? You know what I mean?
This Castle will be starting there next year. And if Chris Paul is still there, he'll be. But honestly, Chris Paul was coming off the bench at his last spot. So who's to say that they won't allow Chris Paul to kind of tutor Castle in the background and just have him run the second team and then have Castle, the threesome of Castle, Fox, and Wembe go ahead and get a little bit more familiar with each other, because that's going to be the quote-unquote big three of that team for some years going forward if they play it the way they could.
The Spurs was able to keep Castle and keep some other players, so they really won because they didn't really give up a whole lot to get that style of player. So,
yeah. A lot of other things going on in the news. Let's go over a few things that are going on. The Warriors, they want another star bad. They pretty much called everybody in the league. They checked in on LeBron. They've checked in on KD. And at this point, they've called the Suns so many times that the Suns are now actually entertaining the move, because Bradley Beal has the no trade clause. They're going to have to make some type of a move to be championship level, because right now is just not it. So if you can't move on Bradley Beal and you can move on Kevin Durant, maybe that's the move. We got the Jimmy Butler situation. Jimmy Butler could have gone to the Warriors. They pretty much had that mapped out already. He vetoed it. He doesn't have a no trade clause, so he couldn't veto it per se. But basically what he told the Warriors was, well, I'm not going to re-sign with you, so you're giving up a bunch of assets for essentially a one-year rental, which if you don't have that leverage, then you have to have the no-trade clause, because if he had, I would say, maybe another year or two left in his deal, even if he told them that he wasn't going to re-sign, they still would have made the trade, because their main thing is getting someone to pair with Steph while they still can before he retires. So the Warriors are not shy about saying we're willing to give up the farm to get somebody of relevance to play with Steph Curry for his last couple of years on the team. How do you guys feel about that scenario in general? How would you feel about KD possibly going back to the Warriors? And then I'll throw in the Miami situation, and Jimmy is pretty much making it as such that if the trade isn't to the Suns, he's not going to go. If you're Miami, and I don't know that this is available, but if it was a situation as to where you give him what he wants but takes what he wants, what I mean by that, you send him to the Suns, but you can't, but you take KD in the process. I don't know how all of this can work out in the next 2 days, because the deadline is on the 6th. But what are your thoughts as far as the Warriors, the Suns, the Heat? Vander, why don't you start us out?
So the Suns is the only team he said he would go to.
He said he wouldn't go to Memphis.
Wasn't Dallas on his list?
To the Warriors. He said he wouldn't extend with the Warriors.
I thought he said he would go to Dallas, though.
I didn't see. I didn't see where it said that. I didn't see any write-ups or anything where we're saying that he would or wouldn't go to Dallas.
I think that would be a power.
What does Dallas have to trade now? I mean, I don't know what the assets are.
They got PJ Washington, and I'm not sure what kind of draft capital they got, but that would be if they can land him, this would be a championship contender team tonight.
Yeah, I don't see Miami giving him up for nothing. Like PJ Washington and a pick. Say again.
Maybe a few picks. I mean, not just one. I mean, at this point, you're a prisoner to him. Because, I mean, if he's telling teams, I'm not going to resign, he already then damaged his value. So you can't just say, well, he's worth this. He's not worth anything. So you can either keep him and pay him, and let him go in the market for free eventually or get something out of the deal. But with that being said, Kevin Durant don't want to be in Miami. I think Bradley Beal, if you were to send him to Phoenix, you might have made the move with Bradley Beal. I think he would waive his no trade clause to go to Miami.
To go to Miami? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think Bradley Beal may want to get out of there.
So my thought was send him to Milwaukee, get Middleton, Bobby Portis, a first and a second.
Who is moving from Miami, South Beach, to Milwaukee?
If you want to leave my team, it's not incumbent upon me to send you to your destination of choice.
Like hell, when he's telling teams, you pretty much just throwing money in the ocean because I'm not re-signing with you.
See, but the thing about sending it to Milwaukee, it's not about the location. It's about the players that are there. Having Giannis, Dame, and Butler together.
Again, that sounds cool, but who want to leave Miami and go live in Milwaukee? We talking about Jimmy Butler. Who want to leave
Miami and go live in Arizona?
Phoenix is popping. What are you talking about? That's like the party city of the U.S.
Phoenix is not Miami, sir.
Yo, out there in Stocksdale, they partying out there, man. I'm telling you, there's some good partying out there in Arizona. Don't get it quick.
Arizona is not Miami. I hear you, but it ain't Miami.
But Jimmy Butler is a unique guy. Let's not forget. I mean, this guy does wear wigs and all kind of crazy stuff, right? So, I mean, he is kind of, you know, unique. But
he's eclectic, eccentric, if you will.
Yeah, so I'm cool with KD going back to, you know, Golden State reunion-wise. Not sure if it's enough, I mean, because it's not the same team. Everybody's getting older and the rest of the NBA is getting better. But at this point, I think that Luka trade has really got people
in a frenzy.
Yeah, by the phones, you know, 24/7 at this point. So everybody's trying to play catch up.
BK, what are your thoughts as far as the Warriors, the Suns, the Heat, all the rumors? What you got?
So I think from a Warriors standpoint, they're in a win now mode. Like you guys pointed out, Steph only has a couple years left. Draymond's not a spring chicken. Like, this team has limited runs left. They have to act now. So whatever they can do to improve the roster, whether it be KD, I know the Butler we talked about only going to Phoenix, but whatever you can do to make that team significantly better for the next 2 years, you do what you can to try to steal one more before Steph rides off into the sunset. As far as from a Suns perspective, you know, they're really top heavy with two players in KD and Booker. And if nobody wants that Beal contract. And if you've watched Beal play, at this point, he's not even any good. So, you know, no one's burning down the phone lines trying to acquire Beal, which is why he's still there. The Suns can try to move them all they want, but there aren't any takers. So they're going to have to do something to make that more appealing. I don't know what that something is, but if I were them, what I would do is I would blow up the whole thing. I would move KD. I would move Beal. If I can somehow package the two together, or better yet, a three-team deal, kind of like what's been done in other scenarios, like what the Kings and Bulls and Spurs just did. But KD's, you know, he's had injury history. He's getting up there in age. I would move both of those and see what you can get. As far as the Butler situation goes with Miami.
Well, actually, let me ask a question real quick before you go there.
Yes.
Do you think that what you just suggested can actually be done in less than 48 hours? Because that's the timeline that they're working with. If it's going to happen this year.
It's going to be hard to pull off such a complicated deal in 48 hours, but stranger things have happened. And as I always like to say, where there's a will, there's a way. It really comes down to how motivated are they to make the move. And the Suns have to be very committed to do that and then find the right partners willing to play ball. there's a lot of variables. So for it to happen in 48 hours is a really, really, really big ask. But I do think it's not within the realm of possibility of happening. I do think it is plausible.
I like Bradley Beal to Milwaukee.
Okay. I wouldn't be mad at that. I wouldn't be mad at that. So you send Beal to Milwaukee.
Send Middleton.
Middleton and Bobby Portis and a first round pick to Miami. And then who's the third team involved? Or is there a third team?
That's involved? The third team.
That is the third team because the Suns would be the
third. Send Jimmy to Phoenix. Send Beal to Milwaukee. And send maybe capital or whatever back to Miami. They don't have to be players. They can just get some money. Maybe some expiring contracts, stuff like that.
I mean, if the Suns gave up a pick, Milwaukee gave up a pick, and then you got Middleton and Portis, I think Miami would take that.
Yeah.
I mean, that could work.
So let me ask you this. How much does it change the Suns' title hopes if they were to have KD, Booker, and Butler? God, it feels like a law firm.
KD, Booker, and who?
Butler.
I think it would change things quite a bit. And the reason for that is this. Currently, you have three ballers, but you don't have one leader. You don't have one guy that's willing to get in anybody's face when things are going awry. If you put two ballers and a leader together, they'll figure it out. Because the ballers just want to ball. KD and Booker are two peas of the same pod. They just want to play basketball. They don't want to get in their teammates' face. They don't want to call anybody out. They don't want to, you know, pressure anybody into attempting to be the best version of themselves. They don't want to do any of that. Jimmy Butler doesn't mind. So if you put Jimmy Butler would end up being what they thought Chris Paul was going to be. Because Chris Paul was the guy that was supposed to be the quote-unquote leader, tame everyone, bring everything in. I just think there's certain player dynamics that in the trade that Vander just presented that everyone wins based on what you're getting and how it fits for the team that they're going to. Quite a bit more things to go over. Let's actually cross over to the NFL for a hot second here. Cooper Kupp is apparently going to the highest bidder. We had teams such as Pittsburgh, who's currently the lead dog in the house. They were trying to get him during the season, but things didn't quite work out as far as that trade didn't materialize. But Cooper Kupp is going to the highest bidder. Myles Garrett requested a trade. He said he wants to go to a location that is going to be a contender. And there are some teams out there that have the cap space and could immediately be a contender. Should he choose to go to a few different teams? So let's go ahead and tackle a little bit of NFL here.
Oh.
BK, I'm going to holler at you first because, my guy, it's not often that things just come together at the right time and in such a way that it's almost serendipitous. This can be a situation where your squad, if they're willing, well, I guess there's a give and take here because you would have to give up quite a bit to Cleveland. Cleveland definitely ain't taking it. They'll hold them hostages before they take pennies for them. I guess I'm going to change my question midstream here. Your Commanders are going to have plenty of money to pay the man. That won't be a problem. But the type of assets that are going to be necessary to be able to swing that, do you think that you're close enough to a Super Bowl window that it would make sense to to trade the assets that are going to be necessary to bring in a Myles Garrett so that he can be to your defense what Jaden Daniels is to your offense? And just keeping it a buck, I don't even know that Myles Garrett is the best that he can be until he's seen a head coach like a Dan Quinn. So we might not have even actually, and I know he's the reigning and defending from last year defensive player of the year. So what are you willing to give up before it's just too rich for your blood? Or this guy coming over is worth giving up whatever Cleveland is asking for outside of Jaden Daniels and Scary Terry.
So what's interesting about Washington's in a terrific spot.
They are.
Their division in general outside of the Eagles has tremendously regressed. The Cowboys with their offseason moves have all, they've already fast forwarded their clock to 2027. So, and the Giants are perennial hot messes, and that's being nice, you know, so that I don't swear on the podcast this week. We'll try to keep it on the up and up. But that being said, Washington has a star quarterback on a rookie salary. And they just made it to the NFC title game as they're currently constructed. Now, you could argue that, you know, Detroit has more talent right now. The Eagles have more talent. Vander and I have even said that the Niners have more talent, but the injury bug killed them, right? So from a roster standpoint, there's competitive teams in the NFC. I would personally maneuver differently if I were Washington. I would make one of two moves. You can do what I call the Yankee approach, which is bypass getting the superstar option and surround them with a bunch of good players. You know, add to the offensive line, add to the defensive line, add a receiver, build the team without spending all that money and giving up all the assets you would have to give for Garrett. Or, and I know this, I'm going to take a page out of the Vander playbook here. I may or may not have gotten a message or two during the time about this. But how about making a little visit to Jerry's World and getting Micah Parsons over there? Because if the options are Micah Parsons or Myles Garrett, and don't get me wrong, I would love to have either or. Please, you know, don't mistake that. I'd rather have Micah Parsons. Sign me up for that and whatever I need to do to make that happen. Vander, how do you feel about that? Am I crazy or does it make sense?
I mean, you're not crazy, but you're not crazy enough. How about that? Because, you know, one of my favorite sayings is two things can be true. I'm making a call to Jerry's World and I'm making a call to Cleveland. This is my bookends. I want both of y'all guys in here because we have all the money, all the cap. We can afford both of you. And could you imagine Parsons screaming off one end and Garrett off the other end? That would be insane. This is like putting Bruce Smith and Reggie White on the same team or something. Or
Lawrence Taylor. Can you imagine Payne in the middle?
I would imagine that Payne would have to be a part of one of those trades to get one of the two.
No, because it's all draft capital. It's all draft capital at this point. I don't need no. Listen, I'm like the GM did in LA.
Okay.
Those picks. Have them. Do what you want with them. Take them all. And you go all in now. That's what they did, and they won. But the difference is they have a rookie quarterback who's under this rookie salary. So you can afford it. Go ahead and salvage your future right now to win now. But you're not savage to the point where you're bringing in still young guys. I mean, Garrett is what, 29? Parsons in his mid-20s. They both still in their prime. Hey, and then you can do the rest through free agency. Don't worry about the draft because you already got everybody want to come to play with you anyway. You can get the receivers and the skill players. That's going to be the easy part. Go ahead, get both of these guys. I know Jerry ain't going to do it, but they're going to have to make look, Parsons the highest.
That's exactly paid. What I was about to say. You know Jerry ain't about to go for that.
Yeah, but they're going to have to make Parsons the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL.
I know this wasn't the question, and forgive me for drooling about my Commanders and all these things here. I got all excited. I got visions of grandeur over here. But one other move I'd like them to make it's pretty well known that Garrett Wilson's available. Can you imagine if I were able to get Jayden Daniels with Scary Terry and Garrett Wilson on Washington?
Here's the thing about that, right? If your quarterback can make guys like De'Ami Brown and Zach Ertz household names, Zach Ertz wasn't bad when he was with the Eagles. But he's just the guy at this point. You don't have to go spend that much capital. You can go get Kyle Pitts, straight up receiver. Pay him as a tight end, but you're going to be a receiver. I'm going to keep Zach Ertz. Going to have both of them out there with Scary Terry. Spend my money on the defense because this guy was able to put up 45 points a game with next to nobody. I mean, you still got Brian Robinson Jr. there. You probably move on from Austin Eckler, but it's not that difficult to find a running back. If anything, invest in being able to protect him as far as the O-line is concerned. Don't hear what I'm not saying, but receivers are a dime a dozen. You can, instead of going after Wilson, go get Diggs. Diggs is about to be a free agent.
Yeah.
Put Diggs on the other side of Scary Terry with that quarterback.
I may be still cool with Amari Cooper.
Is he a free agent or is he still on contract with Buffalo?
Nah, he's going to be a free agent. That's what I'm saying. Okay. You got guys like Stephon Diggs. You got Amari Cooper. You got T. Higgins. You got Keenan Allen Jr. Well, not Jr. Keenan Allen. You still got Brandon Cooks, Deontay Johnson. He's a headache. You got DeAndre Hopkins. So you still got some guys. Marquise Hollywood Brown is also another guy.
I would love Amari Cooper. Give me Amari Cooper. Give me T. Higgins. Give me something like that.
Yeah.
I personally, Diggs is a great receiver, and I mean great receiver. To me, he's a diva and a headache. Like, I don't really want to deal with that. Washington's built such a great culture there now. I don't need that kind of me player coming in there.
That's actually what could make him be the best version of him. Everywhere else he's been, there hasn't been a veteran presence in the locker room. He was supposed to be the veteran.
I'd rather have Amari Cooper.
Say again?
I'd rather have Amari Cooper.
Agreed.
I mean,
he's younger.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
But of the two of them, I think Amari Cooper is probably going to cost you more. So what I'm looking for is how you can maximize on the offense without spending, so you can max out your spending and your effort.
Amari can't ask for too much. I mean, he's coming off a little down.
That's a fact. You know what? It's another guy that's going to be available. I'm going after Devontae Adams.
I mean, I put it like this. I'm doing a couple.
And he already said that he would be more than willing to play with our Jayden Daniels. I'm going after Devontae Adams. Actually,
that's cool. Number one.
And I want to point out, Devontae, I know I said a lot of things about you going into I just want you to know that we can still be friends.
Yeah.
I will pick you up at the airport. We'll get you to the nation's capital. Yeah. I can assure you that we'll let bygones be bygones. Come on over.
But, I mean, again, like, I'm doing that move. I'm definitely calling Cleveland. I'm offering the first, second, fifth, you know, maybe something like that. Throw a couple picks out there. And then another guy. I know, you know, the Parsons-Garrett thing may be far-fetched, but something that is a whole lot more possible and also still elite, Khalil Mack. If I got Garrett on one end, I got Khalil Mack on the other. I'm cool with that because I know Khalil Mack's maybe a 2-year deal. You know what I'm saying? He probably got, but that's fine. I know what he's going to bring to the table. And then go from there. But.
Oh, you know who else you could bring in that's a certified mercenary? Jadeveon Clowney. Yeah, just putting that out there. Everywhere he's been, when healthy, and he's been healthy the last few years, he's been a difference maker. Basically what we're saying is the Commanders have a lot of good problems. This is going to be fun watching what they do this offseason because they literally, they can't go wrong. Like they they're in a position right now because of what they did with quarterback. They have a whole ton of options that are all going to be fun to watch. And with the way some of the Dallas players were talking about Dan Quinn, I don't think he's going to have to do much recruiting if Jerry doesn't want to play any of those players, because they're already looking like, really? You took that team and got them where that quickly? And we, what? Okay, I see what you're doing, coach. I'm en route. Don't even worry about it. What else we got? Asia Wilson. Her number was retired this weekend in South Carolina. We had an awesome game. South Carolina Lady Gamecocks got a win, and Asia Wilson was able to retire her number in the same game. So that was a ton of fun out there this weekend. Right downtown, traffic was hell, but hey, you know, you only get ever so often to be able to see greatness up close. So I definitely understand. Kirk Cousins was injured week 10 and just continued to play. Does that change anything that you feel about Kirk Cousins, or does it make it even worse because he's injured yet again? And even if that was the reason why you played poorly, it seems like you're either going to get injured or play poorly, one of the two, when it matters the most. Should ATL go ahead and move on and let the young buck do what he's going to do? Or do you think that Kirk Cousins should actually stick around Chocolate City?
No, I mean, they need to move on. I mean, I thought it was a bad deal when they signed him. If I was GM, the Falcons, they would have probably been playing tomorrow, playing Sunday, because I wouldn't have spent $40 million on Cousins when I could have got Russell Wilson for a measly $1 million, and now I got another $30-some-odd million of spending free agency, right? But the move is now. I mean, the end of the season showing that. I think the keys already been passed. Penix ended out on a pretty high note. And hell, traded him to Cleveland. They need a quarterback, I mean, at this point.
Well, what's interesting about the whole situation is, I know in the offseason after signing Cousins, everyone was floored that they would draft Penix, right? Like, that was a surprising move to the so-called experts. But if you kind of read the tea leaves, it makes sense, because it goes back to Vander, something that I've said to Zay a few times, which is Cousins is, you know, over in his mid-30s, coming off a serious injury. You don't know what you're getting when he's coming back, how healthy. And I almost feel like he played more of that year hurt or wasn't ready to come back than people might have let on, given the age and the serious nature of his injury. So now to find out he has been playing confirmed injury since week 10, my guess it was before that as well. But at the end of the day, they need to move on. Cousins will find a gig somewhere else. Someone will pay him. And for the Falcons, they need to, you know, let that go, roll with Penix, and basically do what I consider the Washington blueprint now, or even the Denver blueprint, and take advantage of a rookie quarterback playing well and build around him. Strike while you can. Like Vander said, don't spend $40 million on a quarterback when you can pay nothing and build all these pieces.
Yeah, they can't do that, though, because they're going to have dead cap even if they move on from they literally just signed Kirk Cousins. So
yeah, but I'm just saying, though, they could have been this, not quite
the same.
Washington. But they was right there. Like, I've seen this when it was unfolding. I was like, yo, just go get – when Russell Wilson came out and said, I played for the veteran minimum, which is $100 million, Atlanta, what are you doing? His wife is from Atlanta. Chocolate City, whoever you want to call it, Black Hollywood, come down here. We put you in the driver's seat for $1 million. I got one of the best offensive lines in football. I got one of the best running backs in football. I got a few pieces at receiver. Go sign, go give Ladarius Sneed $1 million, $20 million he was looking for. And now you got the two corners on the end. You got Terrell on one, you got Sneed, who's a real lockdown corner, on the other end. They picked up the safety, Jeffrey Simmons, from the Bucks, gave him $8 million. like, you could have really put this team, I mean, this team would have been something to reckon with if they'd have took that $40 million and bust it up along the team versus giving it to a guy coming off an Achilles injury. I mean, I don't know. That's just me. I need to be a GM. Is anybody listening, man?
Listen, I need to add a dual title to not only a superstar fantasy football expert, but now an NFL GM.
I'm telling you.
I'll be your agent, but I won't be Scott Boras, so nobody wants to deal with you for me.
At the end of the day, the only thing some of us need is an opportunity. That's all I can tell you. So a couple other things to cover real quick. This has me awaiting the WNBA season with bated breath. Because my squad, the team that I was able to jump on the bandwagon of before before the train left the station, if you will, the Indiana Fever, I believe are making some business decisions. I believe the WNBA are making some business decisions right now as far as some of these moves are concerned to ensure that their star player, Caitlin Clark, will never not be in the playoffs again. And deep in the playoffs, because these, like, they got Dawana Bonner, who a champion, a veteran, Natasha Howard, Sophie Cunningham, all coming to the Fever. They obviously already have Caitlin Clark. They have Aaliyah Boston. They already have a decent core, but these ladies that are coming to the Fever right now, they're bringing experience. They're bringing playoff grit. They're bringing the aspect to the locker room of being able to answer questions that you didn't know you should have. I don't believe that going forward, as long as Caitlin Clark is a part of the Fever, that she will ever not be one of the top seeds heading into the playoffs. And look, this team is actually set up to be able to contend for a title this year. So if you thought you saw the Fever in a lot of primetime games last year, that was just because Caitlin was there. Now with the addition of Bonner, Howard, and Cunningham, look, they got everything they need. They have the defense, they have the offense, they have the star power. I believe this year, the Fever will be competing with the Aces yet again.
The Aces just made a move, though, so that, I think that move kind of hurts them.
Yeah, the move that the Aces just made, and I may be mistaken, but I think the Aces actually just sent one of their veterans,
Plum,
to the Fever. Plum went to the Sparks.
Right.
Yeah, she went to the Sparks, but there's another vet now. With Plum and also, I can't remember her name at the moment. But she was drafted last year, ended up getting hurt pretty early in the year. Block party, to say the least. She was ridiculous. Her and Angel were the two that were probably going to be battling it out as far as blocks were concerned. I mean, when I tell you block party in session, she was ridiculous on defense, but they're going to be several very competitive teams based on the moves that have been made right now. And it almost feels as if the WNBA is saying we have to make some moves that are going to make several teams in the right markets can't miss events. And we're going to build off of what we did last year.
In all honesty, I don't think it's going to go up. I think it's going to be going to see it come back. I think we already seen the height of women's basketball, the excitement coming from the college ranks to, you know, following Caitlin Clark, her LSU, Gamecocks, everything was going simultaneously. And it was a thing that people was watching. I think the honeymoon period is over. Then we kind of going to go back into the dark ages of the WNBA.
I don't think so.
I'm about to tell you why, because when you look at the tickets, of course, Caitlin Clark, she's box office. Wherever arena she's in, it's a sellout. But if you go to the Atlanta Dream game, when they're just playing someone, there's no butts in the seats. The ticket price is like going to see
the Charlotte Hornets play. Like the Dream aren't very good.
Again, so again, it's going to be, I think people are going to follow Caitlin Clark because she's exciting. She has a pretty good fan base from even from her college days. The Owl fan base is still watching. But as a whole, even with the best player in the WNBA, it's still not somebody that people are watching. I don't say I'm about to tune
the
in
Aces
and watch.
Had, I want to say the vast majority of their games were sold out last year in Vegas.
You see what you just said? In Vegas. So
yeah.
So people are just
that's
there.
Where the best player is.
No. But people are not tuning in to see her in South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. I'm talking about turning the TV on. The reason why these tickets are sold out because it's in Vegas and we need something to do for the night. And Vegas is always packed, pumping, whatever. There's no real fan base in Las Vegas because I guarantee you that stadium is full of people from all over the country. They're not people that's from Las Vegas saying, here, I'm watching these games. Like, I'm giving you a point. The most popular player is not even being tuned into. Caitlin Clark, people follow her because she has a little pizzazz, a little Steph Curry-ish shooting the long three-pointers, a little, you know what I mean? But as a whole, even though we've seen a spike in the WNBA, it still was in the red when it was all said and done. And I think it's still going to continue to go back to that point. I want to see the women do well, but something got to change in the rules. Maybe they bring the goals down to 9 feet and we see some more dunking or something. But something got to happen to bring more eyes to the game. Because even in high school, we've been in high school and you probably went to a high school game. You know, the girls usually play before the boys. It's not many people in there. Then when the boys play, you start to see the people come in. It's no different. It's the same thing on the professional level like you see on the lower levels of basketball.
BK, your thoughts?
So I'm going to get some hate mail for this, but
I don't see.
But it won't be the first or last time I do. So, Vander, I agree with you, but I'm going to take it a step further.
Thanks.
While
go ahead and give out your personal emails right quick so I don't get any of the hate mail that you're about to get.
So here's what I'll say. Caitlin Clark has revolutionized interest in women's basketball without question. But the issue that I have is if you watch professional women's basketball in general from a talent and interest level in entertainment, it's borderline unwatchable. You watch the NBA talent, you even watch college basketball players on the men's side. The athleticism is so much better, and the game, the quality of the game and the skill is so much better that it's not the same. The only thing that's going to make it okay is if T-Swift starts showing up at Fever games and then going to all the games, because then people look.
Not really.
And I want to preface this by saying I want to be wrong because I think it's better for professional sports to have some other viable option for people to tune into. I want it to be successful. I want it to be very good. I want people to be interested. It's just not. Most people just don't care.
I got to give both of y'all some pushback on this. And only because I've seen over the last several years the
Watch
seats
this.
Going from being empty to them actually being able to show the camera throughout the entire stadium because the top 20 rows aren't actually empty. You've seen what we have here in the state of South Carolina with Don Staley and the girls there. We kind of have an opposite sort of a situation and when comparing NBA to men's college. We have right now where women's college is actually making the WNBA more popular. It's normally been a fact where the NBA has just always been a little bit more popular than college ball most people that are into college, you can't get them to not watch it. But the NBA was a little bit more popular. You have the opposite when it comes to women. People are watching the WNBA because they want to see what the superstars in college are doing and will do, and seeing who they are coupling up with as far as teams are concerned.
No.
Yes. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what I know.
No, you don't.
There's never been a time in the WNBA where you can take a novice watcher and they can tell you who some of the best players are on several different teams versus not even knowing that there was a team.
Listen, nobody knows. Hey, I am a sport encyclopedia, almanac, whatever you want to name. I'm one of the best. I can't name 10 stars in WNBA.
Well, that's right? You.
So, no, but guess what?
I know a whole lot less about sports than you, and guess I can what? Name 10.
The casual fan don't know. They can't tell you what team they're on or anything. The difference between college and pros is this. Yeah, Dawn Staley, what she's doing at USC, that's way different because they have a fan base. They have alumni. They have a student. Like, there's so much other things that come with attendance when you compare college to pros. We're seeing a decline in viewership in the NBA. So what the hell you think going on in WNBA? If the NBA, like BK was just saying, with all the athleticism, the dunks, and all this other stuff.
Have you been looking at the numbers? They've had more viewership in the last 3 years than they've had in 23 years.
But it's not because, again, you missed it. Did you miss the first part of the soliloquy earlier? It's not because of the superstars in college. It's because of Caitlin Clark. She ignited.
Caitlin Clark has only been there for 1 year. How was the increase over the last 3 years because of somebody that's
BK, before you start, before you go, Zay, I'm pretty sure we all are pretty versed in the stock market. If I got a 2 cent stock and it went to 4 cent, I got 100% gain. You see what I'm saying? So it's still 4 cent. So yeah, I've seen a big jump. Yeah, but it's still 4 cents a share. So it's not like it's a big stock. It's still a penny stock. And that's going on right now. There's still a penny stock. Yeah. If it go up 300%, woo, I went from 2 cent to 6 cent. Yay. It's still a penny stock. And that's what's going on with this thing. If it wasn't for Caitlin Clark putting the energizer in the back of this thing is still, it's been in the red since its existence. The WNBA has never made a profit since it came out. Go ahead, BK.
Wasn't designed to.
Viewership
and profit are two different conversations.
So here's my issue with this, right? So I'm not going to speak for you, Vander. I can speak for you in this, Zay, because I'm going to reference you in this. Let's just say I know a lot of people that watch sports. Okay? Do you know the only person confirmed that I know that watches the WNBA? You. Nobody else cares. And the reason why nobody cares is because, again, this is the truth. It's unwatchable. Most of the players are terrible. Yes, they're superstar players. I won't dispute that. And yes, there's the Clark effect. And I want to be wrong, but the attendance, the viewership, the talent level, the eyes don't lie. The players mostly are awful. And that's a fact. Yes, there's 10 or 12 that are great.
Had more sold out games, even when Caitlin Clark was not playing in the game at all.
Who?
They're going backwards.
Who?
I said that the WNBA had more sold out games last year than ever, even when Caitlin Clark was not involved in a game.
Take that total and take out the total of games that the Fever didn't play.
Wait, one more time. Say that again.
You say they had so many sold out games.
Mm-hmm.
No Fever games and no home Aces games. How many do you think sold out? I guarantee you none.
More than before. That's not true.
Again, 2 cent stock.
That's not true, though.
It's still a penny stock.
And so that's fine.
You telling me the view, if you tell me it's 100% better, it's still a penny stock.
But that doesn't mean that it's not increasing.
It's still, you didn't make any money. You didn't make any money.
But that's two different conversations. I'm not talking about whether or not the WNBA is making money.
I'm not talking about
profit. And in all actuality, what took it from a penny stock to a regular stock is the fact that they just got a billion-dollar TV deal. So they're straight on income between that and then they made some other deals like as far as like who they're going to have when they're like jerseys and stuff, like different companies.
All right.
So what happens with the TV deal when viewership plummets? Then they're going to have to renegotiate that because...
What happens if it doesn't plummet? They wouldn't have gotten the TV deal if viewership wasn't up.
It's going to plummet.
Okay, well, I mean, that's an opinion. What I've seen thus far is their viewership is what got them the billion-dollar TV deal. So, I mean...
If it weren't for Caitlin Clark, this train wouldn't even be rolling at all.
But there is a Caitlin Clark, and she's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay.
Even if it's because of Caitlin Clark that numbers continuing to increase, that's but fine.
Those numbers, again, are in only certain areas. Again.
You think the NBA is selling out everywhere? I've seen Charlotte. I've seen Milwaukee.
It's a hell of a lot more than a WNBA game.
So Zay, I don't mean to poke the bear here, but here's how I look at this. It's my belief that the novelty of Caitlin Clark, which was a phenomenal phenomenon last year, and will probably be a huge phenomenon this year, but afterwards there's going to be the law of diminishing returns, no sir, there won't be.
You know why? Because there's a young lady named Juju Watkins coming out, and I believe she's actually better than Caitlin Clark. There's a young lady named Paige Bueckers coming out, and I believe she's as good as Caitlin Clark.
I think Bueckers just tore ACL while you talk to me.
One more time?
I think Bueckers just tore ACL again while you talk
to me. Don't do that, BK. Don't do that. I don't have time to answer the amount of hate mail that we will receive with you talking crap about. But no, what I'm saying is we're no longer in a stage or age where there isn't a next woman up. They're 3, 4, 5 superstars deep over the next several years that I believe will have a similar effect as a Caitlin Clark. You've never had a... I'll give you this. People tune in to the Sky game to see if Angel Reese is going to fail. She's more infamous than she is famous. There are several different players that people are tuning in to watch, and there will be several more players that will be leaving college over the next few years that people are going to do the same thing.
Listen, let me
It doesn't get worse from here, in my opinion.
Let me tell you what you weren't paying attention to. Let me help you. You speak about Juju. She can hoop. She plays ball very well. Who gives a damn? That's not what has gotten this basketball to where it is. The thing that the why Caitlin Clark is so big and why Angel Reese is so big, let's just call it what it is. It was a battle of race. No different than when the inmates versus the Catholics. So you remember Notre Dame versus the Hurricanes back in the day? That's the thing that was selling this thing, because you had LSU versus the white girls up there in Iowa, and you had a great white hope that could actually hoop. And this is the thing they were selling, and they got behind it. And if you've been following it, they took that and they took it to the... It ain't about Paige, but who gives a damn about Paige or Juju? It's not about just them being good ballers. At the time, it was just right. It all came at the right time. That's it.
It reminds me of Magic and Bird.
Those are the two best things you can come up with.
Magic. And you know what happened after Magic and Bird? Jordan. That's Juju. Watch what I tell you. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. You brought up the analogy. Magic and Bird. Yeah, you're right.
Listen.
And what came next?
How many?
Something that took the game. Because because if you want to keep it a buck, you're historians of the game. The NBA wasn't doing too well financially back in that day.
They needed
Magic and Bird the same way they needed Angel and Caitlin.
Guess what? Guess it wasn't because Magic was just so great. And again, the thing I just told you that boosted this thing. You got this great white boy. Hold on.
Okay.
You got,
I'm running with you,
you
on this.
You got this white boy from French Lick that's killing the brothers. And then you got the bro. And they clash. And it was, we've seen it so many times in sports.
Yeah.
Whether you go back to boxing.
I'm agreeing with you on that.
Whether it's boxing.
You, don't forget what came after that.
Was pumping up Peter McNeely when he fight Mike Tyson.
There were plenty of people that said at that point that Magic and Bird have brought the NBA to its peak. There's no way it can get any bigger than this. They were in the red before. They're finally making some headway, but this is the biggest they can get because of these two guys. They're literally going by the same exact playbook. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah,
they're following the same model.
Again, there's no high flying. Unless a girl going to come through high flying.
Hey, don't be surprised. It's your girl in South Carolina, Ashley Watkins.
Listen,
in the game, but boy, then she ended up getting hurt.
Lisa Leslie dunked in the game 30 years ago. I don't care. Okay. I'm talking about really doing this high flying and really throwing it. It'd have to be something insane for you, because you said Jordan came. There's no woman Jordan coming around. Okay.
Look, I'm telling you, Juju is like that, man.
No.
Watch her. I'm telling you.
I watch her.
Was like
she,
that.
Listen, she can ball. But you know who else who can ball? I've seen Shamika Holzclaw. I've seen my other, you know,
Pat Summit. Your girl in Notre Dame. Candace Hannah.
Parker.
Candace. I mean, there's been a slew of girls that can hoop.
Ivory Ladder.
My girl's in Connecticut.
Taurasi.
What's the one that retired early?
Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi.
That name got an M in it. She's like one of the best ones that come out of Connecticut. She retired early. She probably like 28, 29. She retired in the WNBA.
Maya Moore.
Maya Moore.
Oh, yeah.
She was a hoop.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But, okay. Sure. And she wasn't even good enough. I know these girls are good enough. Sue Bird, these girls can ball. But they're not.
There are plenty of NBA players that I can name that were prior to Magic and Bird that could ball, but it just hadn't. There's certain things that have to happen to propel the thing to its height, and then you're building off of that. Again, there were guys that were better than Magic and Bird that played before the two of them, but that if they had played after them, they would have gotten more limelight, if you will, because of the light that's shown on the NBA because of Magic and Bird.
Right. But at the same time, it was you understand the ABA, all these things, the different things that was going on around that time when they trying to get this thing up and running. They needed some kind of spark. Just so happened those two guys came along. You see it all the time in sports. If you can get a really good black player and you get a really good white player and they just happen to run into each other at the same time. It's much CT, especially.
And that's what we just saw. And it was right. Just their first year.
Right. But it's over now. Because guess what? Angel Reese sucks. Caitlin Clark is carrying
his. Magic and Bird wasn't over after 1 year, but Caitlin and Angel are?
Yeah, because Angel ain't no magic. I mean, Angel's no magic. Caitlin's a bird, but Angel's no magic.
You're still going to have the quote unquote. And matter of fact, just to be clear, Angel is not the. It should be Asia and Caitlin, just so we're on the same page.
But again, they got to coincide. They got to go. They got the trajectory. They got to meet in order for this thing to work. Like I say, with Notre Dame and the Hurricanes, they's on a collision course. That's why it worked. So
yeah, think about it. Bird and Magic propelled from college into the pros at the same time.
Right.
Reese and Clark came into the pros at the same time. Wilson's been in there for what, a decade? It's
right.
Not the same thing. 7 years.
She's been there for a minute.
Way longer than a year. The trajectory is not the same.
They got to be on a collision course.
I again don't mind being right and the both of you being wrong. And we'll revisit this conversation 2 years from now when the WNBA is still on the same buzz that they were on last year.
Yeah.
And if they're out of business, I'll say I was wrong. And I'll be okay with that.
Vander, We need to go over there to Zay's house and check on his adult sippy cup. I'm concerned that we might have find some issues.
No, I'm gonna call the police and do a wellness check. I'll just have them go by and check on him. and then they'll find what he's really doing and arrest him.
Hey, look, all I can tell you is this. I've been wrong before, but as it pertains to this, it's just the stock that I don't care what it looks like today. I'm pouring a lot of investments into because I just got a real good feeling about it. And penny stock or not, matter of fact, if it is a penny stock, that means I can have a whole lot more shares of it and it won't take but so much movement for me to strike it rich. So I don't mind it being a penny stock and me investing in it while it's a penny stock. So that way I don't have to invest as much in it to get as much out of it as I want to get. Because I'll give it to you. But that's a great analogy. I do believe that it's at its beginning stages. And now it's WNBA is cryptocurrency from a few years back when everybody thought it was, hey, don't let them people steal your money. And then it became, oh, wow, y'all actually making money doing that?
I don't think it's crypto.
The WNBA is crypto.
No.
It's not pennies. It's crypto.
It's dinar.
No.
Remember that when people was buying the currency over there so, in Saudi Arabia or whatever? Yeah, it's dinar. That's what it is. It's dinar.
No. You can send all of your hate mail to Young Vander at thegospel.com.
Just saying, man. It's true. Hey, I'm like BK. I want to see them. I would love for it to be successful. But at the end of the day, we're going to call a spade and keep it real. Hey, it is what it is.
Your version of real doesn't line up with mine. I believe the WNBA.
You have kids in high school, right?
Yeah. I have a kid in high school. Okay.
Go early and catch the girls game and look at the audience when you get there. And then when the boys start to play, watch the audience. It's no different. No different.
It's quite different.
I don't care what high school. Choose, pick one. It don't matter. Pick one. It's going to be the same.
It's not.
I equate it to Vander's point, right? You go to a high school game, check out the girls and guys game. Go to a college game. Go to most college basketball games. The women's games are empty. The men's games are packed. That's not everywhere. That's not South Carolina stores, right. Connecticut. Right.
Everybody can't be a superstar. Every NBA team don't sell out. That's the point that y'all missing.
But in college, my point is in college, people are going to watch these games routinely, regularly, all the time. They're vested in this. Mm-hmm. To Vander's point, we, not you because you follow it more than both of us combined, but how many, if you took a poll and said, name 10 college basketball players, men's college basketball players, and name 10 WNBA players, I guarantee you, as a BK best bet, it's much easier for people to name 10 college basketball players than they would ever name 10 WNBA players.
I don't know about that.
Because nobody cares.
Used to be, yes. But the men's college basketball game is not as popular as the women's college basketball game right now. It's not.
We'll talk about that in March.
I mean, look, I'm just telling you what I know.
You're only saying that because you live in Columbia, South Carolina, and you happen to be in the city of the number one team. So it looks different. But trust me, on a larger scale, no way.
I would, to give you an example of what women's college basketball is, or even the WNBA for that matter, is if you go back to South Carolina Gamecocks women basketball prior to Dawn Staley, that's pretty much what it is across the country.
Right.
Well, all I can say is I'm okay with standing on my own two feet and both of you being wrong. All hate mail should be sent to Young Vander and BK Wins as BK. By the way, be prepared to hear an earful from my wife when you see her, when you coach her in pickleball. Because her and her mom are two of the biggest women's college basketball and WNBA fans that I know. So I just want you to be prepared for when you see her in the next
coming. Watch this. Watch this, BK, before we go. How many jerseys does she own?
How many jerseys does she own? She doesn't own the jersey of anybody, of any team, of any sport.
How many? When the last time you walked to Walmart, Target, the mall, Burger King, Taco Bell, and you seen somebody with a WNBA jersey on?
I can't remember the last place that I saw a WNBA jersey on sale. So I don't know that they're readily available, to be honest with you.
What more do I need to say? This is the massive.
How many people did you see sporting jerseys when Jordan and Bird came along? I said they in the beginning stages.
The beginning stages? You know how long the WNBA been going?
No. Men's basketball had been around a long time before Bird and Magic. What I'm saying is it going to the next level started with two people. And it's the same thing that's happening in the WNBA right now.
The masses don't care.
Okay.
The masses didn't care about the
NBA.
The viewership was only, and all of that being said, the fans only went up 49%. I did the research. 49% from the year before. Good luck with that stock.
That
Vander, you brought up a good point though. Maybe Ebony can wear a BK pickleball jersey since she doesn't have any Angel Reese or anybody else jersey.
Yeah. They're not readily available. What part about that did you?
What do you mean they're not readily available? What do you mean?
Not readily available.
Yes, they are.
Where?
Online. That's what. Hold on. Everybody does. Let's do that.
I've never purchased a jersey online before. Every jersey that I bought of any team has been in a store.
Hold on.
It's been an impulse buy because I saw it. Hold on.
This is 2025.
I know what year it is.
There's a thing called e-commerce. There's no brick and mortar. Everybody sits at home and shop. You ever heard of Amazon? You should check it out. It's pretty neat. Yeah, people go in there and they type in what they want. And guess what? If you're really nice to them, they'll deliver it the next day. If you're in a nice city, they'll deliver it the same day. It's called Amazon.com.
You know how many jerseys I bought from Amazon in my entire life?
They're not readily available. Get out of here.
Zero.
They're not readily available.
That's how many. Zero jerseys have I ever purchased from Amazon.
You know why? Nobody gives a damn. That's why.
It works both ways.
No. Because I see NBA jerseys.
So because I've never bought a jersey from Amazon, I'm not a sports fan?
No. That says a lot. The point like BK was making, I was making, that says a lot about the fandom that these teams hold versus like a USC Gamecock and all those other kind of stuff. Like it's a big difference. I bet you if you walk down Hughie Street, you may see some aged USC jerseys around there because you in that area.
Yeah, and you know where most of them bought them from? The stores near Huger Street.
No, they bought them online. Yeah. Cheaper. Shit from China.
They bought them jerseys on their way into a game the same way I bought mine. Yeah. No one's buying jerseys from Amazon. They're buying the jersey on the way
into the game. No one's buying WNBA jerseys, period.
Yeah, thank you.
No one's buying WNBA jerseys, period.
That's not a thing. Most of the people that buy NBA and NFL jerseys are not female. They're males.
But the what? Point is
they're the male. The people that are buying the NBA and the NFL jerseys and all that stuff it's a different demographic.
You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised the number of women that own NFL jerseys. It's a large. They have a really big. I'm talking about. Turn on your TV. Women got the whole. Every woman in there got a jersey on. Go to NFL.com. They have their own section. Trust me, there's a lot of women buying jerseys. So. Don't get it twisted.
I mean, they can buy their jerseys, their leggings. By the way, I'm a big fan. But nevertheless, I had to make Zay on good terms with me after I peed on the WNBA Cheerios for 25 minutes. So
hey, I've been right about several other stocks that I ended up making out on because people indicated that I was wrong. And I'm okay with that. I'll run with it until you see it, and then you can hop on board as well. That's okay. I'm more than willing to do that. With that being said, that does wrap up the show for today. We will be back to you a little bit later this week. The Super Bowl is 5 days away. We cannot wait. And we will definitely be here to talk with you about what happened that weekend. And then the weekly recap show will be gone until next season. But as soon as things start popping off in the NFL as far as off-season activity and ramping up as far as the draft is concerned, we will have the fantasy show back. But you'll still be able to catch us on Friday morning with the show that we'll be recording on Thursday night, the flagship Gospel Sports Truth podcast. With that being said, thank you so very much for rolling with us, and we will see you soon. And remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
We out.
Later, y'all.